Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about guest readiness. I want to kind of define that a little bit, and I'll just be upfront and honest. There's a whole lot for us to talk about in this theme. I'm going to only be able to hit the highlights. I'd be more than happy either at the end of this session or beyond this if you say, yeah, well, could you tell me more about? I am by no means an expert. I consider myself an observer. And I hope that some of my observations will be beneficial to you. Church growth, as we've talked about in briefly in the last session, is going to require new people to come to the church. That's what church growth is, aside from just individuals. And so I have in my first 16 years of ministry, I was in full-time work. My wife Tammy and I began doing marriage and family seminars about 5 years ago, which took me to California, where I took an associate or co-minister's position. The preacher there was 30 years younger than me. Somebody said, he could be your son. I go, nope, he'd be better behaved if he was my son. But I got more work done. I wasn't the first guy to get a call for a funeral, the first guy to get called for a wedding or a hospital visit. Then I came to Oklahoma City and worked for a while with the Southwest Church, again, as the outreach and involvement minister. Well, they had two other ministers. They had a pulpit minister and a youth minister. Nobody even knew I was there. I had my own office. I just got the work done. So I'm all about that. But I, over time, began to realize that outreach and involvement was actually one thing. That we meet someone in our community, that we engage them, with a conversation about Jesus, hopefully that produces a change in their life and a conversion, and they become part of a church, local church family, which means they're involved in the work of engaging the community. In other words, it's one particular action. So I kind of broke down what I want us to talk about or what I should consider today into three or four categories. First of all, and that is to be an invitational church. Now, we're going to break that into two pieces. But to be an invitational church, number two, to be a welcoming church, and number three, to be a growing church, primarily in the area of follow-up. So let's redefine some things. Never again should you have a visitor at your church. That would be my beginning point. Because visitors are people that come in and go out and there's not much left other than maybe a memory. I want you to begin to think in terms of everyone that quote unquote visits your church is a guest. A guest is someone that though they might impose are not an imposition. They're someone that you want to be there. They're someone you've invited to be there. They're someone that you're welcome. They are not a threat to you. They are not an inconvenience to you. I started to say, think about a family member that comes to visit, but sometimes they're an inconvenience and a threat. But the point is this, you are looking forward to the guests who are being there. And so you want to know a little bit more about being a church that is very guest-oriented? I would encourage you to get the book from the Disney Institute. That's, yes, the folks that are involved in Disneyland and Disney World and all that, entitled Be Our Guest. And it's all about guest relations. And you would say, well, that does not have to do with church, and it has to do everything with it, because there probably is nobody that does a better job at guest relations than the Disney Corporation. And I got to experience it firsthand. I learned what Code V means this week at Disney World. When somebody gets off of a ride after eating that foot-long corn dog and it shook them around and half of that corn dog comes back out, Code V, they will spread, and I'll let you figure out what the V stands for. Okay? So, that's number one. Number two is to see that it is not just a kind of a one-hit, this idea of guest readiness. That we're going to have to build an awareness, then there's going to be an invitational aspect, then a welcoming aspect, and then a follow-up aspect. For example, When it comes to awareness, does anyone in your community know who you are? Do they know where you are? Do they know who or what you're about? One of my best friends here in town, Anita, attended with me at Southwest. And they have, I guess that building's what, 15, 17 years old? They were down closer to downtown on Agnew Street. They built a beautiful building off of I-44 and 104th. So a little bit on the outskirts of the city. And I said, I'm working with the Southwest Church of Christ. And they said, where is that? Now, it's a relatively new building. Wasn't surprised that even people in that community didn't know exactly where it was. So I had to give them some kind of a direction. I said, it's the steepled church building across from the Crest grocery store. Oh, I know where Crest is. Yes, I've seen that church, right? And it was my challenge at that time as the outreach involved minister says, I want somebody to go, Crest, I don't know that I know where that grocery store is. And they'd go, it's the grocery store across from the Southwest Church of Christ. Oh, I know where the Southwest Church of Christ is. You understand about awareness? Now, there are two kinds of publicity. There's good publicity and there is bad publicity. Now, I might add that it's still publicity, so don't look at all of it as bad. But the idea is that we would like to have a good reputation in our town. But our expectation is often that because we know where we are, everyone else knows where we are. Or because we put our name out on a marquee that we finally got through committee and built it and lit it, that everybody, because we put it up there and put all of our service times and our web address and our phone number and our address and the preacher's name and some powerful and impressive passage of scripture, we put on a placard about this big so that as you're driving by at 45 miles an hour, you'll read it, that everybody knows who we are and where we are. In fact, sometimes they may know your building and not have a clue as to who you are. And the reason why is because the marketplace is flooded. I use it not as a denominational expression, but do you know how many Christian churches there were in the first century? The questions get harder from here. So if you think you know this, this would be the time to look smart and jump in. One. There was one, quote unquote, Christian church. How about today? Now, I know you're all going, only one true. Yeah, but there's a whole lot of other so-called churches who follow Jesus. And so the marketplace is flooded. In addition, all the other religious influences that are not, quote unquote, Christian in their heritage, some that are maybe Jewish. I have a synagogue that's not far from my house here on the south end of town. Maybe Jewish. Maybe it is that there's some that has nothing to do with Jesus at all. I mean, out in California, they have the Breatharians. Not Brethrens, the Breatharians. They're all about breathing. That's their religion. I don't know why they're in California. That's the worst place to be breathing. They need to move to Colorado to find their faith. So what we're doing is we're going to take and we're going to make some people aware. Here are some suggestions that I have. Number one is that is to create an identity for your church. Now, if you were in the last session, you know that I kind of looked with disdain on this idea of the Madison Avenue mentality of marketing your church. But I simply want you to understand this. Every single thing you do tells a community about you. Your reputation, whether it's genuine, trustworthy, whether you're trouble, whether you're a problem, all the things that you do, and for that matter, every single member in your congregation is a reflection of your congregation. So if you have a good intending brother or a good intending sister who has nothing best to do but to bash everybody on Facebook, and then she posts in between, Jesus loves you and we would like to invite you to our church. We love you too, just not as much as Jesus does. I mean, that's kind of the way that it's saying. So you want to make sure that. So In strategies, there is this idea of what I call touch points. I didn't coin that phrase, but it is every place that you come in contact with your community. The new front door of church buildings is, does anyone want to guess? your website. And when your website comes up and it looks like it was created before the internet was created, you have told the people that you are behind on everything, that you are not attentive. When it still shows the picnic for the 2000 millennium changeover, you're behind, and that's how you're going to be viewed. And so I'm convinced that you need to have absolutely not a good website, the very best website you can find. And it isn't to show the birthdays and anniversaries. It's to show your community who you are. I'm so glad Brandon got here when he did, because he'll talk a whole lot more about technology, and I wanted him to hear me say it, that I don't know that there's anything else you can be that can be as important about guest readiness as having the absolute best website that you can, in its appearance, in its content, in your ability to navigate it. But there are other touch points. Do you have a church van? Do you have a church sign? Do you have a church building? How are those branded? I'm working with a congregation in Greenville, Texas, on a kind of a part-time interim basis while they're looking for a preacher, and they moved from a congregation that had a street name to now they're the Creekside Congregation, and they have a couple of trailers that they could take to camp and everything. But you know what they're branded as? What they were before. That's going to be one of the things I suggest. We splurge on the $10 worth of paint. Hey, I ain't Creekside people in here. I had to make sure that I've got a bad mouth. I want to make sure they're in the other room. But no, but that's the idea. I want that when they see the bus, when they see the trailer, when they see the sign, that everything looks the same. Not only in its quality, in other words, we've got a nice bus, but I want whatever that logo is or the church name in the same font. I don't want it to look like our promotional material is a ransom note. You know what I mean by that? Cut out this letter here and this letter here and this letter here. And so the branding of your congregation is essential. If you're going to cut through the noise, that means that you have a look about your advertising and about your website, your signage, your social media. In fact, I had to do a screenshot of this. This is one church's Twitter page. Do you know Twitter? Okay. It says, "This Twitter is intended for our membership only. If you are not one of our members, you may be excluded from following. Jesus loves you. We hope you'll visit us sometime." Just not our Twitter page. Okay. What does that say about all of these touch points are things that you're going to have to reflect. I want you to recognize that it needs to be clean, it needs to be consistent, it needs to show that we value what we do here. I understand that over time, I was just talking to Greg Giltner, who is was the chief of police for Oklahoma Christian University's police department, now retired, though is very involved, and Oklahoma Christian is rebranding with a new logo and a new look and some new promotional material. It's going to cost them hundreds of thousands of dollars. Thank you, students. That's who's going to pay for it when it's all said and done. But the point is, it's not cheap to do that, but it's going to cost you more not to do it. So consider your awareness. But beyond just your physical appearance is going to be your presence in a community. Simply put, one word, service. It is one of the key factors in which individuals are sorting through the mass of religious groups out there. We used to boil it down by saying no one will care how much you know until they know how much you care. If there was ever a time that it was more true than now, I don't know when it is. They need to see you working in the community. They need to see you cleaning up the streets around your building. They need to see you cleaning up the streets around other people's buildings. They need to see you serving in times of tragedy. They need to see you serving in times when there is no tragedy at all. I would encourage you tomorrow to attend Anita Armstrong's class on doing good, as she is, as far as I'm concerned, an expert on doing it in a congregation and outside the walls of a congregation. How can we serve people? We may not think about it this way, but we are in the service building, right? I mean, business. Jesus came to serve. His work on the cross was the absolute greatest expression, not just only of love, but of service. I mean, I want you to think about it. God Himself has set Himself in the service business. We talk about we serve God, but who's doing all the work, right? He creates us. We didn't do anything in that. It was His plan for Him to sustain us. He just simply said, "Obey, listen to me, be in a relationship with me. I'm going to take care of everything." We come to God in prayer, right? I ask for this, I ask for this, I ask for this, because we serve You, but we would like You to serve us by doing this and this and this and this and this. I mean, Christianity as a whole is full of God serving His people. In fact, even the idea of Him being the king as He came in the person of Jesus, did you know that the primary role of a king, the primary role of a governor, the primary role of a government is to serve the people? And so we're in the service business. There is, I don't think there's anybody, well, there's two. I'll give a tie here. There are two organizations that I think do a great job in the service business. Number one, Amazon. Even to the point that now the reviews for Amazon online are being skewed by the fact that Amazon in the past has done such a great job in service. That's why you return something and before it's even processed through, you see a credit back. And that they'll take things back because here's what they're finding. 9 out of 10 times they do a great job and then they blow it. And you're asked to review online. You don't put. If you're a long-standing Amazon customer, they don't put they blew it. They give them a pass because of all the other good things they've done. And so Amazon does a great job in building that customer relationship through service because they know that in the long run, it pays Amazon. Okay? The other, and far more spiritual, Chick-fil-A, right? There is nobody. Just next time you go to a Chick-fil-A, because you'll have to if you're going to get into heaven, you're going to have to go to a Chick-fil-A. Not the best chicken in the world, but the best service in the world. Try to be the person who says the last thing at the drive-thru. It's a great day here, Chick-fil-A. How can I help you? You give your order. Pull around. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Go around there. Hi, I'm Katie. Here's your food. Thank you so much. You know, a chicken lost his life for you, but we're all happy about it, right? Okay, thank you. Well, thank you. No, I mean, thank you. Thank you. It's hard. They'll beat you out on that. Number three right behind is the In-N-Out Burger, but since you live in Oklahoma, you don't even know what a real In-N-Out Burger is. You have to go to California to the company that has, I know Texas has it, but it's not the same. The highest satisfaction amongst employees in any company is In-N-Out Burger because they pride themselves on having the very best of what they do. That being said, simply put, we want people to understand that we have something for them, not that we want something from them. Right? We have something for them, not that we have something from them. This awareness is the first half of the invitation. The invitational church is to make themselves visible in a community. But you're going to have to at some point do something more than hope that because you have a good sign and people see you picking up trash wearing your church t-shirt and all those things that they're just going to gravitate. You're going to have to be invitational. I found this statistic staggering. In a recent survey, 70 to 80% of those surveyed said that they would attend a church service if somebody invited them. That was it. Do you know what the statistic is of churchgoers who say that in a given year they invite at least one person? 2%. I wonder why we're not growing. Nobody seems to be interested in church anymore. 70%. Take it 50%. Ultimately conservative. 50% of the people said, I would go to a church service at least once if somebody just invited me. Had nothing to do with the preaching, the music, the kids program. If somebody invited me. And 2% of the people are doing the inviting. So we're going to have to become an invitational church. Now, in the past, invitations, we have been in a community that, I'll just say this in a broad sense, we live in religious community. We've lived in religious communities. And in a broad sense, in quotes, not even capitalized, we have lived in a Christian religious community. We often convert people from a denomination. We rarely had to convince them there was a God, that Jesus was his son, that the Bible is his word, just they needed to understand it more clearly. Not the case anymore. Our culture, our community is dramatically changed. They are skeptical. They are unchurched. They are non-churched. They are done with churched. I mean, everything is there. And so we're not going to be able to just put on our marquee, please come hear the truth, unlike the other church across the street. People are looking for answers. Now, this is not new. Jesus found those individuals that were following him because they wanted to see a miracle, not because they were looking for Messiah. We had those individuals that, after seeing one of those miracles, being a free meal, they came back again for a free meal. Now, the third time, Jesus says, all right, you're not coming to Wednesday nights. You're just here on Sundays for the free meal. That's going to come to an end. Not exactly, new paraphrase, my Bible, 1995, available at the table outside. Okay? But that's the point, right? That we're going to have to find some new ways to invite them, and it's not going to be just coming to church. I call these side door opportunities. Now, we have been using side door opportunities for a long time. For example, one of our most successful side door opportunities, Vacation Bible School. I found a number of years ago that it was more successful than I thought. We were doing our Vacation Bible School. We had themed it. It was after the very first Jurassic Park, which actually came out just a few years after the actual dinosaurs died. That's how old the original Jurassic Park was. But that's how we had themed it, and we were going to talk about dinosaurs and creation and the flood and some of these evidences. And so I challenged my kids, I have five kids, for them to bring one person every single night to Vacation Bible School. Well, they took me up on the challenge and they each brought five. Tammy had to use the church bus. You ever seen one of those cartoons of the bus with the kids hanging out the window and three dogs and a cat chasing them? That's how Tammy came looking in the park. Well, we made it a practice to meet when we took the kids home or when we picked them up, the family, right? We wanted them to feel comfortable. And so we went up and I introduced myself, and she says, I am so glad you're taking my kid with you to Vacation Bible School. We attend at the Kingdom Hall. Now, that's the Jehovah's Witnesses. Now, as a general rule, the Jehovah's Witnesses do not send their kids to Bible school at the Church of Christ. But she went on to say, she goes, I have no idea what to talk to them about when it comes to dinosaurs and the like. So it was one of those things that it didn't seem as if it was a threat to their doctrine. And it might be that you offer a Dave Ramsey financial peace course. So he says, well, what does that have to do? Well, I will tell you, it has a lot to do. It has a lot to do with not just side door opportunities, but stewardship in your own congregation. It actually will increase your contribution. So that's all that matters, right? We count what we count for those who are here. But the point is this. It might be a grief seminar. It might be a special workshop about marriage. Something that the listener goes, listen, that's something I need. Tammy and I experience this all over the country. People that don't go to church anywhere but are having trouble in their marriage. They're not interested in finding a church. They're not interested in Jesus and God and truth at that point. They just said, we got to try to find a way to keep from divorcing. But it's a great side door opportunity. And then I mentioned earlier about the value of small groups. As I said, the model right now is that the gathering on a weekend is to drive people to the small groups. I think a small groups is a great side door opportunity to bring people into the congregation as a whole. I may not can get you to church, but I get you to my house with four or five other couples who are eating together for just some food, some laughter, some conversation, and maybe we end with praying for one of our group that's really struggling, and people go, that wasn't so hard, and I love the barbecue, right? And over time, they begin to know these people. Let me tell you a quick story. A good friend of mine, Michael Height, who is the Vice President of Operations for the Bear Valley International Bible Institute of Denver. His business card's like this long now. Mike Height grew up as a Catholic. His wife grew up as a Baptist. Her dad worked for Billy Graham and for his organization. They were not looking for religion. In fact, Mike had very little to do even with his religious tradition. But he was working towards becoming a commercial artist, a graphic artist. And it just so happened that he ended up in the community college next to another friend of mine, and they both liked golf. And so over time, they golfed together. And then I got to golf with Mike and with Wes a little bit. And then Mike said, well, my wife is pregnant, and she's a banker, but she's going to, once the baby's born, going to go back to the bank, but we're going to have to find somebody to daycare our kids. And Wes says, hey, you need to contact Tammy Roberts. She does daycare. So we had a kind of a different connection because of that and the golf and their friendship. They'd go out to dinner with us, and they would go on a camping trip with us. And then they started actually into a Bible study with the preacher at that congregation. And in a little bit, there was a conversation between another friend and Michael. And Michael said, I'll just tell you, we love the people here, but we don't feel like a part of this church. Now, in what I think was a stroke of genius or just pure wisdom, that friend didn't do what I would have done. I would have said, Michael, what are you talking about? We love you. We love Lynn. We love little Melissa. He said, well, you're not a part. And you'll never be a part until you're truly a part of this church body through the blood of Christ. The next Sunday, Michael, not even speaking to his wife, stood up at the invitation song, marched down the aisle to hear the pitter-patter little feet behind him. Lynn had gotten up and followed him down the aisle. They both became that Christians that day. Within a short time, her dad, who was working for Billy Graham, came to visit and met my dad, who got into a Bible study with him, and he and his wife were converted for him to go back to his Baptist church and preach his next sermon on how we've missed it on baptism. Now, the point was this. They didn't come because there was an invitation. They came because there was a relationship. We're going to have to find a way as an invitational church to be those that actually are building relationships with people. I propose to a lot of churches that you have an open house. I don't know if you know this, but a lot of people are afraid of your church building. They're weird structures. They're built unlike anything else. I'm convinced that architects that design churches have never actually been to church because they don't know at all how. I put a choir loft in there. I know, but you got to slide down a bat bowl to get to the baptistry, okay? It's not designed very well. Function is the best fashion, and this isn't function here. But nevertheless, as I get to rambling here, but it's this, is that they go, it's a scary building. And I don't know if you've ever been in there. They've got weird furniture in there. And it has kind of a smell about it, the furniture, that is. And the people, they talk in funny language, right? And they have these books with weird singing notes in. I mean, everything's weird to them. So have an open house. Have an open house that has no objective to it other than letting you introduce yourself to them. Have your teachers there. Classrooms open. Simply says, come by, we're going to have a barbecue. We have an open house at our building. We'd like you to come in. We're going to unlock all the doors. We're going to show you around. We want you to see, yeah, this is where we gather, and yeah, it's kind of weird. We think it's weird too, right? And this is Sister So-and-so. Oh, I shouldn't have turned to Anita and said Sister So-and-so. Over here, Brother So-and-so. And yeah, we think he's weird too, okay? We got some weird ones here. We could take a few more. Is this your wife? Okay, anyway, but that's the idea is what? Because we're going to recognize that we're going to open the doors and we want you to say, here's what we do here, okay? But don't mistake the fact that because you get them to your building that you're always an invitational church. Because sometimes it means you're going to have to go to where they are. Again, that's where the service. Okay, so you get them there for the first time. And it is here that it all goes bad. And here's why. We have promised everything in the world in our invitations. Exciting program, right? All these things, and then they get to our building and they have no idea where it is to go. They don't know where the bathrooms are. They don't know where the classes are. Oh, there's a sweet old lady that's been there for an hour and a half before the services start who comes over. I've been going to this church since I was a girl. We came here in covered wagon. We're glad you're here. You're the one that makes the furniture smell the way that you do. They're knowing that. If it's you, I'm sorry. If you think it's not you, guess what? It is you, because you just don't know that. Before they ever get there, though, there are some things that you need to do. One of them is that you need to realize that because they're guests, you have been preparing for them. For example, you should have guest parking. I had one group of leaders say, we don't need guest parking. All the parking in our building is convenient to the front door. It has nothing to do with the convenience of the front door. It has two purposes. Number one, it tells them where the front door is. That's where we would like you to come in, not where all the late members come in, right? But the second is this: you matter. Wesley Walker, who spoke this morning, is staying at my house. Before we even left for our last seminar trip, Tammy had set out a clean set of sheets, some blankets, and some towels out for Wesley to use when he gets there. Now, she could have said, there are sheets in that closet. There are towels in that cabinet. There's your room. That's not the way she operates. Why? Well, because she is showing hospitality. I want you to know that you matter enough that this place, even before you decided to come here, has been saved just for you. Now, I did see a church in California, one of my favorite signs ever. Visitor parking only. First three visits. Now, I don't know if that's three consecutive ones, or can you visit twice and then not come and then say, I'm starting over again? I don't know. I think they missed the mark on that a little bit, but they probably had the preacher kept parking in it because it was closest to the front door. Number two is that you have a first impression, a team of greeters. And I don't just mean the folks that are always there. I'm talking about a trained group of people who are manning every door that is in and out of that building, not just the front door. Not the bulletin hander outer. I don't know what their official title is, but not that person. Not just the person that opens the door. I'm talking about a group of people that are watching and waiting. In fact, they're not even waiting at the front door. They're engaging them maybe as early as the street, saying, this way. If you went to church here, you'd already be at church. I don't know what your sign's going to say. Those who are engaging them in the parking lot. Now, I don't mean when somebody parks way over there that they see a herd of people with lanyards chasing after them. I found one, let's get him, like it's some kind of hunting expedition. But I am suggesting that, kind of like that prodigal's father, when he finally saw the son coming, he ran out to me. We have been waiting for you to get here. Making people feel welcome begins even before they get into the door. Now, I will say that in like a big congregation, the Southwest congregation, I don't know what there are, 8 different entrances and exits into the auditorium, much less into the building. That means you've got to cover all of those, but you can't get everybody. So one answer to that is what I call zone greeting. That's where you have greeters that are set throughout an auditorium, and their responsibility is to greet and meet the people that are around them. Don't try to get to everyone. You can't. I recently went into an Apple store to have my wife's battery on her iPhone replaced, and the young man came out there, and you know, he had his iPad, and he asked my name, and he asked for the phone information and what all was needed, and he punched it all in. And I found it was interesting that in just a moment, a guy came out to me, walked right up to me, though I had walked off to look at some stuff. He goes, hey, Wayne, he says, I'm ready to take a look at that phone. You want to come back with me? And I thought, well, this is a different guy. Then when I came back to pick up the phone, a different guy walked up to me and he said, in fact, it's interesting I'm wearing this shirt. I didn't even think about that. He goes, hey, Wayne, your phone's all ready. And I go, I got to ask you. I said, how'd you know my name? He goes, teal shirt. It says right here. Because when I walked into the Apple store, they put what I was wearing, what my name was, and where I was going to be waiting. So now, I don't know that you're going to be able to facilitate that in a local church, but can you imagine if the greeter said, hi, what's your name? And who are these? These are your two kids. Oh, really? How old are they? And they punched it in. Every greeter and the preacher and everybody else instantly knew. Now, I don't want you to walk up and go, hi, you must be Cindy. You know, that's a little creepy. But at the same time, it's nice to know that Cindy's there because her husband left her last week and she needs a church family. That you don't go up and go, well, is your husband with you? Right? Uncomfortable? We used to play that joke in school. Go ask him how their mother is. And they go, my mother died. Right? We used to do that trick. No, she really did. Oh, then you made everybody feel bad. So, but I think just from the standpoint of the red carpet treatment when they get there. Anybody know who Emeril Lagasse is? The TV chef? Tammy and I went to his restaurant in New Orleans. Food was great. Service, impeccable. Tammy was sitting there, big old maitre d', big guy. Came up and Tammy goes, could you point me to the restrooms? He goes, I'll do better than that. He put out his arm. She put her arm in and he walked her to the bathroom. I thought, I'm in New Orleans, Louisiana, and some guy I've never met just walked arm in arm with my wife off. I don't know where they're going. It's a nice car they got into, and we found her 3 days later. But the point was what? I'm not going to just tell you where it is. I'm going to show you. And I can imagine in a situation where someone's greeted in the parking lot. We didn't run them through the gauntlet of every greeter, but they said, oh, you've got kids. What ages are they? Let me show you where their classes are. You walk them down there, and then when the person comes out, she's standing there, he's standing there waiting for their kids, that you're there and go, hey, how'd they like class? Let me show you how to get back to the auditorium. Do you guys need to use the restroom? Let me show you. That's the kind of service that people are looking for. And it may seem foolish to you because you know where your pew is, but they don't have one yet, and ultimately, in fact, when they get there, it's time for you to give up your seat. And here's why. It's not yours. I was at a congregation, preacher challenged, that the next week he wanted everybody to sit closer to the front to allow space in the back for the guests and closer to the middle of the rows so that people that came in late could get in. We had a lady that sat just about where my friend Andrew is sitting here, and she did not budge. I mean, she had strapped herself in. And afterwards, she explained it this way. This was my daddy's seat, and it's my seat, and I'm not giving it up for anybody. So she's going to be embarrassed when everybody goes to be with Jesus, and she ain't going anywhere, right? You know what I'm saying? That's just the way it worked. It's not your seat. But here's some suggestions is don't just leave a back row, but leave a back row. Because almost always, those guests are going to be late. In fact, greeters who go, oh, the first song is starting, I better get in there, have fallen down on their duty. They need to be there when people get there. They need to be there after services have started. They need to be there when services are over, because follow-up starts right then. They should be ever present. So they come in and you say, we've saved you some seats. The front row, that's where we put all the sinners. Come on down. And I will tell you, there was a preacher in California. Preacher is probably a real stretch, but nevertheless he was. He left the front row, two rows of his gigantic church open. He said, I left it there for the sinners and for the prostitutes. And they said, why would you do that? And he goes, because I'll tell you right now, when they start showing up, people are going to pack the house to see the front two rows full of sinners and prostitutes. And he packed the house and converted some and even married one of them. But that's a whole nother story. The idea is this, that you can give up your seat. Tammy and I frequently have someone tell us, and we're the guest speakers, we're in their seat. even to the point that we've been asked multiple times this year if we would move. Now you're going, I can't believe it. You better believe it, because it's happening. I can almost guarantee it. But here's a beautiful thing. Why don't you say this? Do you have a place to sit? Would you sit with me and my family and slide down? Now, they may be a little creeped out by it, but you know what I think they're saying? You know, can you imagine if you're in one of these sports arenas and the owner of the team said, hey, would you come up and be in my box? You wouldn't go, well, that's creepy. You'd go, absolutely. Is there free food in there? But the point is this, that you make it a place where they have a place to sit. Then when it's time for your services to begin, you need to expect not that they're stupid, but that they have no idea what's about to happen. Tammy and I went a few years ago to Walt Disney World and to the Epcot Center, and they had a ride. And as I got there, there is a sign that said, if you are expecting, do not ride this ride. We went a little further. There's another ride, and it says, if you have high blood pressure or a history of heart disease, do not ride this ride. Then they start going through this, and I'm going, I wasn't pregnant, but I don't know about this other stuff. I mean, at the end of it, he goes, you can go this way on the ride or this way. And it was like, if you have any possible medical affliction, your head's going to explode on this ride. I was so nervous when I buckled into that thing. I thought, we're going to blast off, and then my head's going to fall off. That's how I felt. Until we rode the ride, it was a great ride. My head did not explode, best I know. It's working as good as it was before. But they don't know what to expect. So we get up and we go, want to remind everybody, today's church eat church. They're cannibals. Right? It's all in one Sunday. I don't know what that is, right? We want you to let you know, we're doing our ding-dong doorbells this afternoon. Everybody goes, you don't have to explain everything in detail, but I will tell you, you need to tell people what that means. They want to come, but they don't know what that is. They need to know that the meal is, oh, I know. We want you to know we got a potluck. Sister so-and-so is trying out a new casserole. There'll be plenty. Trust me, nobody's going to eat it, right? So it's that kind of an idea. But you need to have that. You need to recognize that this is an exercise. I wouldn't encourage you to do this on a Sunday morning because you'll get a visitor from one of the preachers or the elders, I guarantee you. But go someplace else to church. In fact, go to a place that isn't according to Scripture. You can repent afterwards. But I'm just saying, as uncomfortable as you feel, that's how they feel. Go to a church that is the Lord's church in another place. It's like going to a family reunion and you're like, I don't know anyone here, right? It's creepy. I'm sorry. It's like looking at my Facebook friends. I'm sorry. They're my friends. They're weird, okay? So to work on that and to tell them about what's going on in your congregation to save them. Here's a great exercise. Pay someone to come to your congregation and be a secret guest. Don't pick somebody from another church. I mean, by that I mean another body of the Lord's church. Find somebody in your town and say, I need your help. I said, we want to know how people are treated in our church, and I'm going to give you $50 to come next Sunday, and at the end of it, tell me what you think. I know what you're thinking. They're going to say, we're a friendly church, because every church is a friendly church. Let me just tell you, you ain't as friendly as you think you are. I could spend the entire time giving you those particular expressions. So let's very quickly, because I need to keep I want to keep us on track here, and I want to give you a break. But just realize that there will be no second visit if the first visit was horrible. My years in sale, as hard as the first sale was, if shipping didn't handle it, if those who were the installers of that particular product did a terrible job, none of everything else mattered. They didn't care what the logo was on the side of my truck. They didn't care how cheap the price was. They didn't care how many times I made an overture towards them using a product. When you mess it up, it messes it up. Have a place for information. Signage, 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 signage. Did I mention signage? If you've been to this building, this is a great facility. But if you go out unattended, don't forget to drop breadcrumbs behind you, because it is hard to find your way around. So somebody says, don't forget, we'll all be meeting in room 305 tonight. Only if you got it by way of Moses' tablets do you know where room 305 is. If you live in Oklahoma City, you can't even tell them what street you're on, because it's northwest, southeast. By the way, 119th becomes 12th?
Yes.
I'm driving along here. The first time I'm moving here, I'm like 119th, 119th, 12th. Where did I take the wrong turn, right? So think of it the same way as those individuals. We don't have the time to talk about guest packet, but you need to have information you can put in people's hands. I'm going to leave you with one more thing. We're not going to be able to get to follow up as much as I would like, but it's simply this. You need to be the kind of congregation that when someone comes to it, they feel as if they have been going there all of their lives. That they're as informed as anyone, that they're accommodated as anyone, that they're loved as anyone, and that when they leave, you're going to need to do something next. Every single thing you do with anyone, you always ask yourself, what is next for this individual? Meaning, not just Bible study because they visited the first time. What is next? We had them for vacation Bible school. Great. What's next? Well, we're going to invite them to our parenting seminar that's in a month. That's great. And then what's next? Well, we'd like to invite them to our congregation. That's great. Well, what's next? We want to have them come to our get to know us luncheon so they get to know more about that's great. What's next? Well, because we want to tell them about a special learning opportunity in our Bible class. That's great. What's next? Because that's what that's what outreach involvement is all about, right? What's next? Even once they become a Christian, we need to already be asking what? What's next? What do you mean, what's next? We got them in. They're in. And that's what we have. We have a lot of people in the boat and nobody's rowing because we forgot what's next. So be asking yourself about that. Love it, some opportunity to come and share with you, your congregation, far more details than we have time to explore here, but hopefully these are giving you little things. If you can see them as guests and not visitors, if you can recognize that you need to be aware, have an awareness in your community, that you need to truly be an invitational, welcoming church, you will leave here better off than you probably were when you came in here. So we're going to take a break and then reconvene here in about 13, 14 minutes for the last of the morning breakout sessions. Thanks for being in here, guys. Appreciate it.